Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We have a caller today that will join us very soon in a few minutes, and we'll be talking about the revolutionary phenotype. It has been a while since I hadn't done a show on the book. Still a valid book, still a book that I'm proud of, and that I tried to challenge the world with this book, and they failed. Scientists have yet to talk about the revolutionary phenotype. They have yet to integrate it in textbook, and yet it is correct theory. A new theory of science completely ignored by the mainstream academics, and yet totally correct. And I know it will still be correct in 100 years, in 1,000 years. And it was part of my plan to test the system. Can you guys take the freedom that you claim the liberal world gives us? Because it's like, I look at the podcast world, it's all a bunch of liberals back when I was young. So I look at the podcast world, it's all a bunch of liberals. It's all a bunch of people connected to Jewish book industry, all promoting their books. And I'm like, would someone who's not liberal in this bunch be totally ignored if he came with important knowledge about the world, an important scientific theory, so important that it predicts the end of humanity? And I did the test. I ran the test. I became a free intellectual, and I said, will they dare ignore science? Will they dare ignore knowledge, and by doing so, make themselves irrelevant long term? And the field of evolution completely has ignored up to now the revolutionary phenotype. And they're doing these lab experiments on stuff that is completely outdated in light of the theory of phenotypic revolution. They act like the discovery isn't there. it's sad to be spending the rest of my life just talking to myself, but it's what many intellectuals have had to do in life. You know, when you come with a theory, sometimes it will be after your death that people recognize it, and it seems that it's going to be that way for the revolutionary phenotype. Although Robert Rivers has accepted the theory. The highest biologist alive, in my view, Robert Rivers, has accepted the theory. So it's weird not to see it invading the textbooks. And you kind of know why, when people are so cocked as to what they teach in the university at this point. We don't teach what the children should learn. We teach what the children want to hear. And this divorce between the academia and knowledge, I've seen it happen with my own eyes. It's part of what threw me outside of academia. And you have no choice but to pursue other routes for knowledge. This was my goal with this book. I wanted the young scientist of the future to know, hey, I can go the JF route. The same way I was looking at the world, and I was like, hey, I can go the Richard Dawkins route. You open up routes, you open up ways of surviving, and you prove to the next generation it's doable. It's doable to not be dependent on the state while being a scientist. It's doable to be a free thinker. It's doable to claim the maximal free speech liberty that is available in our country, and yet to survive. Look at me. I'm dressed, I'm not homeless, I'm not under the rain, I have Bitcoin. All of these tricks to me were important components of my demonstration. My demonstration being to the next scientist in this world, yes, you can do it. Don't feel that you have to depend on a system that squashes your thinking. Claim your liberty and face the consequences of it. AI sends a super chat, 2 super chats through Entropy. I'll address the super chats before we get to our caller. AI says, hey, Jeff, I just saw that you reposted on X the video of my super chat asking for BTC advice. I just wanted to update you, as indeed, I did buy 50K worth of BTC at an average price of 33K. I bought slowly to get familiarized and the price rose a bit. So I'm at almost 2x. I'm so happy and will be eternally grateful to you. I will keep you updated as the bull run ends if you want. Hopefully you will discuss exit strategies, peak price estimations, and re-entry strategies for the next cycle. Wow, I'm so glad, man, because I was digging my old tweets about Bitcoin. And I saw this tweet. I was like, hey, I wonder what happened with this guy. And there you are confirming you did do 2x. Yes! Because this guy came to us late in the bull run and said, JF, I have $50,000. Is it still time to get in? And I said, yes, get in with everything. Oh my God, and now he has double the money. And it's not over, my friend. It's not over. I'm sure you're going to get, triple the money. I think you can still hope for a 3x in your case. And more, because all of the signs are pointing to more than my most conservative estimate. But certainly in my most conservative estimate, you still have space for 3x. In my crazy estimates, you have space for still a good 10x for yourself. So I will discuss all of these points. I am so happy that you're sending us back some feedback. It's good to know that I've helped someone in the crowd double his wealth. Raised Fist says, we'll believe your BTC story if you tip JF $1,000. Ah, well, you know, don't hesitate to just tip at the top of the bull run. Don't hesitate to tip me once you've seen the result. You don't have to tip big amounts now. MB14 says, come on, JF, artificial intelligence controlled reproduction cannot be this bad. You will be utterly humiliated when I prove you wrong. Where do we even begin? You will prove me wrong. The day the humanity has been converted into sterile working sheep for the AI, they will be convinced that this is the greatest life. So by this time, the people will ridicule JF. They will say, I look at this primitive human and how he was afraid for us. Look at us now. Aren't we good? And they're going to have this creepy NPC AI edited smile. You have given up liberty. I tell you to all of these people in the future who are AI modified genetically, you have lost your humanity. Fuck you. And fuck your perfect life. Even if you think it's perfect, I don't care. I know it's not, and I know you're headed toward internal corruption of the worst kind. You are headed toward becoming a slave. Ariel Suarez says, I should have bought Bitcoin back in the early and mid-2010s. TT, I will forever regret not having done so. The reality is, even if you had bought Bitcoin then, there would have been a point at which you would have sold. No one sees 10,000x and doesn't sell. You know? So it's kind of a theoretical question, this whole, what if I had adulted since 2010? Because the reality is there's always going to be a moment where you feel it's the end. All right, let's get connected with our caller. We will get connected with him and see what he has to say on the revolutionary phenotype. G, I only see the first name of your nickname. G, are you there?
Hey, I'm here. It's General Chief. I'm using
General Chief.
You know. Yeah.
All right. So I believe that you came to me a few days ago. We missed each other a couple of times. But you wanted to talk about the revolutionary phenotype, and I'm always up for a discussion about this book. How are you doing? Can you introduce yourself to the audience? And what did you want to talk about?
Uh, Yeah, hey man, how's it going? I'm General Chief. I would say I'm on Discord quite a bit. If anyone wants to hear me, there's Promethean Tides, which is kind of a dead channel at this point. But also, I'm appearing on a Pnoid News more recently, PNOID News. Yeah, dude. No, I wanted to talk to you about I guess your idea of the revolutionary phenotype, because I think it's a really good idea. I think it's one of the better ideas that have come out of biology, at least, you know, in the past 50 years. I mean, evolutionary biology, it's been quite stagnant as far as I can see it. So it's cool that, you know, there's actually people still trying to push forward some evolutionary ideas. If you want to get right into the criticism, we can do that. We can also chat about just like I guess like some aspects of this, just the other day I was talking to a guy and he was saying you know, like, oh, I want to go full robot, you know. I went, look man, if you want to like replace your arm, right, that's fine. But the minute that you start replacing like your genitals, that's where things go wrong. Let's not do that.
Yeah, I'm excited about your critique, but perhaps just to know where it comes from, you could lay out your points of agreement, and then we would understand even better where that critique becomes valid. So what are the points you agree with the theory? And you know, I love to understand, I love to hear critiques from someone who demonstrates an understanding of the book.
I think that the evolutionary mechanism that you've described makes sense. I've been thinking about it actually for a few years now. Almost all of it makes sense to me. The idea that you could have let's say a replicator accidentally make a phenotype that can also do replication, and then you, of course, as you've stated plenty of times before, you get into a replicator tango where, you know, they end up reproducing each other. That's dangerous, of course. I understand that. You know, really, it's the idea that could this happen today? And that's the scary thing, because it might happen today. But what I'm actually kind of scared of is that it might actually happen today, but I don't know if it's happened in the past. I don't know if it actually happened 4 billion years ago.
Okay. So you can see the replicator tango in your head. You can see the evolutionary mechanism, but you think that it wouldn't have happened 4 billion years ago. That I have never heard that opposition. So how is it that you can't see or that you can see that it wouldn't have happened 4 billion years ago?
So to put it as like to put the metaphor first, and I can go into the actual idea. But as a metaphor, I see it as you have like some genes. They're on a canoe, right? And then here comes a big ocean liner. And the genes abandon the canoe and they hop onto the ocean liner. And maybe the ocean liner, you know, picks up the canoe as, you know, just a resource, you know, to use at some point, you know, if it needs to, you know, do some shit with an island or something. But the genes in this case would survive, right? So in this metaphor that I'm laying out, the canoe is RNA, and this big ocean liner is DNA. Now the RNA got enslaved. That's obvious. And I totally agree with that, but, it seems to me like for the most part, obviously there probably were some casualties, that occurred during this, but for the most part, probably most of the genes survived the transition from RNA to DNA.
The survival of the gene from one form to another. I agree that maybe many, maybe all. I can't say for sure, but I would agree that maybe all genes, or perhaps most genes, survived from the RNA form into the DNA form. But then the question I would ask you is, Do you think that this makes it not a phenotypic revolution?
I think that the true, replicator in all this is not the physical medium of the RNA or the DNA necessarily. It's the genes themselves. As long as the genes survive, I have trouble seeing how it is a phenotypic revolution. I guess that is the that would be the crux of our relatively minor disagreement. I mostly agree with the rest of the theory.
It's almost a moral argument. You seem satisfied that the genes survive between RNA and DNA. We'll get to it, and I want to get to the point where I will tell you you shouldn't. And it's bad what happened for RNA, and it's going to be bad for us. But I want to point out that even definitionally, I took great care at page 34 in the Revolutionary Phenotype to make sure that your opposition wouldn't work. Here's how I defined a phenotypic revolution. Sometimes a native replicator produces a phenotypic machine that happens to make copies of itself. In the event that such a phenotypic machine develops survival capabilities that are independent of the native replicator, we call this machine a revolutionary phenotype. The rare origination of a revolutionary phenotype marks its establishment as an entity subject to traditional evolution, as it has at last become an independent replicator. See, nowhere in this do I say you need to kill everyone from the RNA form or you need to eliminate their genes. We can get into the nice question of, is it transmission for a gene to survive informationally in one form to another? Is mind uploading survival? Is genome saving in a hard drive survival? But I want to point out that my definition of phenotypic revolution, as I was inventing the concept, does not require the elimination of all genes. Because, of course, if that requirement was there, the presence of RNA viruses today would be sufficient to argue that no phenotypic revolution has occurred.
Okay, sure. So, assuming that the RNA viruses that we encounter in the modern day from that original, I mean, they might have come from somewhere else, as we know.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I still think that the preservation of the genes is actually something that's quite important here, right? Because why is it I would have to ask you what if we're going to talk about the enslavement of an organism, I guess the organism, as you would describe it, would be the RNA with the genes on it, or the DNA with the genes on it, and those are kind of separate entities because they're built with different nucleic backbones or whatever. But the way that I see it, it's more like the gene is the replicator. You know, you could go back to Dawkins, the selfish gene. It seems as though really it's the gene that's the replicator, and it's been able to use these polynucleotides to further itself. But I mean, I would say from the gene's perspective, does it really matter to the gene whether it's on an RNA or a DNA? Is that really an important thing to is that important? Does that matter? I guess
it doesn't matter to the gene. And now we get into the subtle and more moral question of matter. First, things don't matter to genes. But my point is, with the revolutionary phenotype, if you can feel what the genes would have felt if they had a brain 4 billion years ago, you would have felt scammed. Because you were in a state of freely evolving. You were something free to take its own direction, and something that was recruiting. This is where the sense of slavery comes in. something that was recruiting its surrounding to the service of its benefits, its reproductive benefits in this case. So it's not like the RNA had a mind. But if you want to empathize with a molecule, you can. You can see a crystal of salt, and you can drop a piano from the 17th floor onto the crystal, and the crystal breaks into pieces. The crystal feels nothing, but you can look at it and feel something. You can feel that it's devastating. You can feel that if you were the crystal, you'd be devastated. You can feel that something that was complex has lost its complexity. And in the case of the RNA, what I invite people to do is you can feel that something that was free eventually wasn't, and something that wasn't enslaved eventually was. That is my point. And if you want to really feel it, you don't even have to have that much empathy for the case of 4 billion years ago. You can imagine that scenario happening to human society, and it may very well happen. So those are my positions. You say here tonight, I don't really care because there was transmission. But we would acknowledge that not all transmission is equal, right? If I told you I'm going to drop a carpet of nuclear bombs onto Africa right now, and don't worry about it, I have recorded 7 genomes across 7 different countries from 7 different Africans, and I'm going to put them on a hard drive and display them in a museum. So we're quit, right? No problem. My immoral action of a nuclear holocaust of the whole of Africa is suddenly fine because I preserve their genes. What would you answer to this? What's wrong with this?
Well, I don't know if I would say that's an entirely fair metaphor. I mean, for instance, I mean, and number one, an issue with that would be that the genes of those humans wouldn't be preserved. They're on a hard drive. Maybe you could record their genes, but I mean, that's no longer like the genes no longer really exist in real space. They're just an ID on a hard drive. Now, I don't know if that, I mean, maybe that's a transition too far. You know, I don't know. But
we're getting closer. Our positions are getting closer. Now, I'm willing to do some adjustments on my side, but you just introduced the idea of being in real space. But acknowledge that RNA genes were in RNA space and DNA genes were in DNA space. Those are different spaces. Those are different set of consequences into the future. Those are different routes that lead to different things. You acknowledge this. You can see the difference.
Oh, okay. That's totally fair criticism. I would say that in the RNA space and in the DNA space, those genes are capable of replication. If you freeze them on a hard drive, they're no longer replicators. So they're no longer the thing that they used to be. Whereas,
okay, well then, let me adjust my example. Then I nuke Africa still. I record the genes on a hard drive. And then I recreate an aquarium in which I grow up a mini Chicago where all of the African genes can express themselves. Is that now okay? And what's wrong with it?
So you're saying you make a Chicago in a fish tank and
a giant fish tank, big like Chicago.
Very big fish tank, yeah. In that case, I think that what you're just doing is like genociding a whole bunch of people, and then you're putting them into, I guess, like a new environment. It wouldn't be the phenotypic revolution that would be the issue there. I think it would just be like genociding that many people and then recreating, I guess, human civilization in your own way that you want to. I mean, I think that would be the issue there.
But what's wrong with genociding that many people?
I mean, okay. I don't necessarily, because I have some weird moral stances. I mean, I know that you're a moral nihilist yourself. Mm-hmm. I would more or less kind of classify myself in the same realm. But I would be against it as a human. As a human, I would be against it, because that seems bad. I'm not gonna say from on high that must be bad, but from my perspective, I would really fucking prefer that you didn't do that.
So you're putting a special pleading here. So let me try to adjust my example. What if I make a lion Chicago? I nuke all of the lions in Africa, and I make a lion paradise, but none of the lions that were alive I keep alive. Instead, I reproduce their genes on a hard drive, copy it into an amphibian egg a la Jurassic Park, and I reconstitute a lion society in Chicago. Are we quit with nature here, or have I done something wrong?
You're not going to get me to say that you did something wrong, but you could get me to say that I would really prefer that you didn't fucking do that.
Yeah,
I mean, that
exactly. Which in my language as a moral nihilist is basically as wrong as it gets. It's I don't like this, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a series of preferences. Yeah.
And why don't you like it? What about the lions? Did I do that you don't like?
Okay, like, to be absolutely fair, a Chicago filled with lions actually seems pretty cool. Like, I'm not sure if I would be against specifically that, but
I want to go to Africa right now because it's happening.
But there are things that you could do that I would not like. You know, like if you wanted to wipe me out and then replicate me on a hard drive, I would be very much against that.
Mm-hmm. And so it seems that simply that you have an arbitrary threshold of extending your empathy. You can extend it to humans, you can extend it to black people, you can extend it to lions, but you can't extend it to molecules, which is fine. Because I know that extending empathy like this is an arbitrary thought experiment. I really don't care. What I care is that you at least you've captured that there is a... All of these examples I've shown, it's all the same thing. It's all a phenotypic revolution. But you seem to agree with ones that you can't quite empathize with the existing being, whereas you don't agree with the ones where you can empathize with the existing being. That's a bias that vegans often... vegans will tell you that you're a speciesist because you eat meat.
Okay, so number one, I'm not a vegan. No one should be a vegan. But I don't try to take a very moral stance on this at all. So let me put this idea out there, just that like you can understand where I'm coming from. I think that like human intelligence is really cool. It's really cool like how smart people are, and that, you know, like you and me, JF, can have this conversation right now. It's awesome.
Yep.
But this is something that I think the majority of the biological science community would disagree with me on. But I don't think that there is really that big of a difference between the evolutionary machinations of, you know, species, I guess, evolution, let's say human intelligence, right? Like I think that the neural network that exists inside your skull is effectively just hyper Darwinianism, yeah, playing out between neurons. And so, like, when people say no, like evolution is just this mindless process, I go, well, if that's the case, then the human mind is also just a mindless process. So it is whatever you want it to be, I guess. So like that's kind of the stance that I take about that, and that's how I can potentially actually feel some empathy for a gene.
Yeah. The way I would say it, and I fully agree with everything you said, if you want to say that evolution is a mindless process, sure. But the human mind is not an evolutionless process. And so these accusations of anthropomorphism, the fact is anthropomorphism is a potential analogy that exists. You can think of genetic interest and it will help you figure out certain things. Richard Dawkins has made that much of a case. My case is, yes, in TRP, I use empathy, I use human thinking and anthropomorphism to communicate a truth. But it doesn't seem up to now that you object to that truth, which is that in the presence of a better medium, genes will have one evolutionary pathway, which is to export themselves in that medium, in which case they engage in a replicator tango and a set of consequences will appear. Those consequences will likely put them on an evolutionary route of abandoning the replication of the previous molecule and moving on to the new molecule that does better for some reason. We agree on all of this, right?
I believe so.
And so, I mean, technically, you agree with the whole mechanistic part of the revolutionary phenotype. That is my progress to science that I've given. Then it seems that the rest is only a disagreement of form, expression, and of thinking about it. Now, I do want to address that separate point, but we have to recognize that it's a very minimal point.
Like I said, it was I'm agreeing with most of, I guess, the idea that you put forward, and my disagreement is relatively minor, but it might end up being important. Let me put this metaphor to you, right? Let's say that I'm a human being, and I usually ride a horse, right? Most people ride horses. Horses are a really important, thing to get people around so that we can live our day-to-day lives. And then suddenly, the Industrial Revolution happens, and now we don't have horses anymore. Now we have human beings in cars instead. Was that a threat to men that moved from horses to cars, or was that just a change that men did to make their lives theoretically better? You can argue about that, but they were just doing something different. You know, from my perspective, and this is maybe going to be like one that you might disagree with. I'm not sure, but I would say that it's almost like the gene is the replicator, and the RNA or the DNA or whatever medium they're using to replicate is more like the phenotype of them. You know, it's the thing that they're writing to replicate themselves.
Well, to me, the scenario you laid out, you genocided not only a couple of horses, probably, because there's probably less interest to farm horses today, but you've also genocided probably a couple of human beings who could have been especially talented at riding horses in the horse riding world, but whose skills perhaps were not as good in a car world, and who ended up not being successful in that new world. So definitely the classical natural selection perspective on this, if you want to think of it evolutionarily, is you genocided a bunch of people and you replaced them with other characteristics.
Well, but that... I mean, people theoretically get genocided all the time. Like when we went from agriculture to Industrial Revolution, there was people that, you know, weren't built to be factory workers, and, you know, maybe many of them died off. I mean, that's just something that happens. I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but in the scope of things, it's not a big deal.
But I mean, it's happening all the time. So if you want to go by, if it happens often, it's not a big deal. Okay. But to me, it's a big deal. It tells us that there always has been branches that we've taken. If we didn't have fire, we may not have computers. And it's not because the computer relies on fire, really. It's that if we didn't have fires, we wouldn't have had the jaws that we have. We wouldn't have had space for a bigger brain, and perhaps the bigger brain couldn't have been there to invent the computer. We have chosen paths, and the evolution is a bunch of why digital choices between one way or another. And the theory of phenotypic revolution is just one more Y choice. The RNA viruses decided to stay on the RNA side. The DNA strand decided to go the DNA way, and one ended up paying a little more than the other.
So if I could try to simplify our disagreement here, I think that it's you believe that the entire structure is the organism, the entire structure of RNA with genes on it, or the entire structure of DNA with genes on it. Whereas I think that it's more like the replicator, the organism is more the genes. And I don't know if the polynucleotide backbone matters as much. I think that that's really the core of our disagreement here.
Well, I'm not sure. That it's the core, because I have more having argued a lot about, especially with people who say, why not JF? Why not subscribe to the great mind upload, to the great, why not team with the machine?
And hey, we both agree, fuck that.
Yeah. And I found that my argument in the end to these people is not so much DNA centric. Although a DNA-centric argument might be a good argument if we could discuss with mosquitoes and try to get them on our side. But we don't have to. We're really having this discussion in between humans as the only species capable of discussing it. And then my opposition is mostly a human-centric one. And the recognition that everything that we are that we care about is mostly phenotypic characteristics like intelligence, culture, everything that we find beautiful about ourselves. And in fact, even the smaller and more primary thing, like the beauty of a woman or the attraction to the whole display in sexual courtship in humanity, all of these things are all things that we care about at the human level. And I want people to understand, if we head toward a phenotypic revolution, it's not just a change of medium. It will have other consequences. And these other consequences reach to the extent of destroying every possible thing that you may ever enjoy about humanity. There is not a thing that survives a central control. There is not a thing, as I show in my book, as I try to lay out in my book, you might have the shape of your limbs survive, but your limbs are going to do something totally different that you couldn't possibly interpret as human from your perspective. All of our ego, all of our creativity, everything that we do to impress the other sex, all of it goes with sexual reproduction. And so it's much more than DNA that we're about to abandon. It's not merely a change of generation. It's not like taking all of the content of a CD and putting it on a DVD and it's still the same music. It's that the change of direction of the relationship between the genotype and the phenotype will be like an acid rain over everything that you hold dear as humans. I think that's a good argument.
Well, you're not going to find any disagreement for me here, because whether we agree or not on whether the true phenotypic revolution happened, 4 billion years ago, I think that a true one might occur right now. I mean, actually, some of the weird technological things that we're facing right now represent not just a death to our phenotype or our species, but potentially even just the genes, which I actually care more about. I like a lot of these things could kill the genes themselves. My position is, yeah, I don't think the genes died 4 billion years ago, but I think that the shit that we're playing with today could actually kill the genes themselves, and that's extra dangerous, and that makes it extra scary, at least to me.
But here's the reason why ultimately I could not define the phenotypic revolution as necessarily being associated with the destruction of all the genes of the native life form. It's because what is this? It's ecological elimination. When an eagle ends up eating the last mice in the field, the last mouse of its species. Is it committing a phenotypic revolution because it's killing the last genes of the last mouse?
No, that's a genocide. That's very different.
That's a genocide. So because that genocide was already a term that already existed, I don't need to reinvent it in this book. In this book, I merely need to explain a new theory about a new concept. So here's the new thing about what I present in Phenotypic Revolution is not the death of a bunch of genes. That would be just regular evolution, regular genocide, regular natural selection. Call it what you want. But there is one thing that's new in this book. It is the transfer of media, which is what I define as a phenotypic revolution. Now, as it turns out, the new life forms that you create, they are equal competitors as the eagle is to the mouse. It can kill it or it may not kill it. That's just regular evolution. So I'm wondering, like, do you realize that your conception of a phenotypic revolution is duplicative with genocide?
No, I don't believe it is, right? Genocide happens all the time. I mean, we can be sad about it, but it is what it is. The issue is that we're going to make a phenotype that is replicating, and I think that we're fairly close to doing this with our modern day technology. We're going to create a replicative phenotype that becomes its own replicator, its own genotype. But even in this, not even the genes will survive. At least 4 billion years ago, the genes more or less, mostly probably, survived the transition from RNA to DNA. I think in the case that we're coming up to, not even the genes will survive. So yes, it's a genocide of the genes, but it's a production of a new phenotypic replicator where not even the genes survive. If we could come to a negotiation place, maybe it's an even more extreme version of a phenotypic revolution. I don't know. Maybe we can compromise on that. But I think there might be a fundamental difference there.
Have you read the chapter on phenotypic separation? Chapter 11.
I'm going to be honest with you. It's been a few years since I read the book. I apologize.
No, I'm sorry. Because what you mentioned there, so a phenotype that would start replicating, but that would go on its own and eventually kill me, that is a phenotypic separation if it doesn't carry my genes. So the thing is, I've accounted for this possibility. I've pointed out to the fact that a phenotypic separation doesn't need to kill the gene, but it could. But it's the Skynet scenario where the life form you've created has somehow its own interest at destroying you. In the case that you present, it would succeed at destroying you. But still, independent of the question of whether it destroys you, you have to acknowledge that there is something before it comes to destroy you. This before is what I'm interested in, because life forms destroying life forms, that's way too banal for a biologist. So I'm not interested in the question of whether it destroys us. I'm interested at what are the mechanisms that would lead to these life forms that, yes, could destroy us. And you're going to have to develop a language that is separate from the language of genocide, the language of destruction, the language of genetic elimination. And that's why I developed this separate language.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. I guess, once again, you know more about this than I do, right? I want to pick your brain and try to figure out how to, you know, understand this better. But it seems like, you know, to me, if the genes survive, but they're in a different medium, I mean, it seems like maybe it was something that they like the genes were, and this is very much anthropomorphizing the genes, but it's something that they were pushing towards to begin with. I mean, we live in a world with selfish genes who want to make sure that there are more genes. If it is more beneficial to genes to move from RNA to DNA or whatever, then they're going to tend to pick that option. And yeah, the medium of replication has changed, but I mean, ultimately, the genes are the things that make the phenotypes, that make the culture, that make it so that we can have beautiful women, you know, in the first place. So, I mean, the genes are important, and I guess I would be very much opposed to anything that might threaten the existence of genes. But well, I mean, I understand your point.
You are raising the genes did it, so it's their fault. No doubt, the genes of the wild boar that chose to approach a human and that became the modern pig, that gene caused its own fate, but that gene had a choice. That gene had a digital choice here to make. It could have stayed in the forest, in which case all of its descendants could be potentially the wild boars of the forest. It could have approached the humans, in which all of its descendants are all of the modern pigs. But it's not because a gene is at the cause of the decision that the decision doesn't exist. My point is, as thinking agents, we have a decision. We can approach the AI, in which case we're setting ourselves up for a phenotypic revolution. There is a path down there where there is survival for some life form. But I say, let us go the other way. The other way is, let us continue feral life, where we benefit from the continued Darwinian improvements on ourselves rather than those determined by another entity. That is the choice we have. It's very similar in a way to the choice that the pig had. There is a feral life in which he's going to have certain abilities that will survive, that will be genetically selected for, and then there's the domesticated life, in which there will be a certain abilities that are kicked out of his genome. We have the same choice for ourselves. Do we want to be domesticated by AI, or do we want to go the feral route? I say the feral route is a more interesting future.
I not to get too off topic, but I just sent you an image, JF. I don't know if you can pull it up on your thing, but I've been putting this triangle around.
Okay, that seems interesting. Let's have a look at it on the stream. Okay, means of production ownership.
So just to briefly explain this, I think that on the so on the top, you have government owning the means of production. That's pure socialism. On the bottom left, you have the workers owning the means of production. That's pure Marxism. And then on the bottom right, you have, I guess, the private sector owning the means of production. That's pure anarcho-capitalism. I put some extra dots in there for fun. I don't know. China's probably not where it should be, you know. What I actually think is the great evil here, if we want to call something evil, would be the pure socialism. I'm against that, but I'm more towards like libertarian, more ANCAP. But I think that if we could find the in between pure Marxism and pure anarcho-capistanism, well, it would be workers owning the means of production, existing in a commune, but they would have to compete with other communes in the free market. What do we call that? We call that tribes. That's anarcho-primitivism. Let's get back to fucking tribal space. That's all I'm saying, man. That's all I'm saying.
Bro, what a disappointment.
That's cool. That's a cool
triangle. You come with an intelligent understanding of the revolutionary phenotype, but you're just one of these basic bitch bread
social triangle.
Co-ops and mixes between anarcho and communism. Are you fucking kidding me, bro?
No, dude, that's cool. Come on.
First, there's not even a triangle there. Workers have never controlled anything and cannot, because worker is an abstract concept. If workers wanted to control something, they would have to form a corporation. And then that corporation would be a private entity. And then if the government controls that private entity, then it would be communism. It's you've designed a triangle where there's actually just a line. There's a line between either the mechanism for control is communal or it's not communal. And if it's not communal, that then it's in the end of individuals.
Well, I mean, I don't think so. I think that I think that there's a big difference between Marxism and socialism. I mean, I don't agree with either one, but I think that people need to recognize the difference between these two. And I mean, like, what is why do you disagree with this triangle so much?
Well, because I said there is a false there is a false two dimension here. Worker and government ultimately is pretty much the same thing. Or if you want to understand worker from a private sense, where the workers are starting co-ops, then it's still an NCAP world, because an NCAP world allows you to create a worker co-op, right? It's just that the worker co-ops systematically lose because it sucks, because one is there to be accountable. There's no such thing as workers controlling the means of production.
Well, I mean, not in reality. I mean, it's a bullshit utopian idea. I agree, but in theory, in ideology, I mean, I guess that is a thing. And in fact, if I would argue that, like, pure Marxism is it doesn't have a government, right? Like, there's no government when we have a fully automated gay luxury space communism. So, I mean, is that not the case? Is there, like, in pure Marxism, there's not a government, isn't that correct?
Well, if there's no government, what distinguishes this system from an NCAP one?
I think one of them says that in the non-government utopia, they will in the non-government utopia that they want to build, they're gonna hold hands and sing Kumbaya around the fire while they set up worker communes. And in the other one, I guess you will still have like companies and you'll have hierarchies and like they look very different. But I mean, I guess that they're both anarchist and they both.
Well, one is a product of imagination. I mean. And doesn't distinguish itself. Like, seriously, the realized Marxist ideal situation.
It doesn't make any sense. I agree.
If I live in it, let's suppose into existence that it exists. Technically, I live in it and I see all these worker co-ops. What is it in that world that keeps me from calling it an NCAP world in which worker co-ops have happened to been very successful?
I mean, in that case, right, you would have a series of worker co-ops, but I don't think that they would be maybe like the size of mega national corporations. So, like, I think they would tend to be smaller in size, right? Which would be more like tribes. And tribes, I think, is what a human should be getting back to. So, like, this is not a triangle of, like, how things are run. This is a triangle of ideology and how people think things ought to be run.
Yeah, definitely that's how they think. Tribes. I don't know, man. The problem of the tribe is what happens when the neighboring tribe crosses the threshold of overpowering through bigger numbers, bigger technology, to the point of dominating the existing your tribe?
Well, I guess you have to band together with a neighbor tribe and set up a government or something. I don't know.
All right, General Chief, I will move on to share some news to my audience. The discussion was very interesting. I think that we could have a further discussion later. Perhaps if you want to do some homework, going back to my African lion example, Chicago example, and if you have further thoughts that didn't come to mind during the show, but would like to talk in a couple of weeks from now, that would be very enjoyable, as you want.
Hey, absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on your show. Pleasure to speak to you. Peace out.
Thanks for coming. Bye-bye. Well, out of the people who claim an opposition to the revolutionary phenotype, he may be the smartest we've ever had. Someone who came with a point that is rational, that is self-consistent, and someone who has taken the time to fully understand the revolutionary phenotype. Now, I do maintain my critique that he is incorrect simply definitionally. He defines the revolution, the theory of phenotypic revolution, as something that I didn't define it to be, and that you couldn't define it to be, because it already exists. What he's talking about is genocide. So whether the revolutionary phenotype genocides us or not is up to the future, and there's many possibilities. It can genocide us slowly, it can genocide us super quick. It depends at how quick it doesn't need us anymore, really. That's what it boils down to. But yeah, so he has to really integrate the page 34 description of the theory of phenotypic revolution and understand that it's the only point of interest. It's the only thing that is new here. DK Shadow says, just plain old boring genocide. Exactly. What a bunch of weird words to put together. MB14 says, why do I feel the need of buying the TRP book just to criticize it? Is it something wrong with me? Am I just a querelleur? Honestly, Jeff, when you talk about TRP, I feel like a dumb person. You have piqued my interest. Can you give me a short grog brain explanation of TRP? Man, it's, yeah, I can. I'll be happy to. The revolutionary phenotype is a new theory of biology that explains a meta cycle of evolution that happens over the usual cycle of evolution. It explains why we have a genetic code. It explains how DNA and RNA emerged. It may explain how proteins emerged. And it explains, ultimately, these critical moments during which replicators show up into existence. And whether they begin to evolve or not is the moment that I call a phenotypic revolution. It is the answer to the question of the emergence of life. And it is also approaching to a theory of everything, to be honest, when you consider that it could have consequences down to the level of physics, it approaches the status of perhaps the only stated possible theory of everything that humanity has ever come with. It is a privilege to have had this idea just fallen to me into my head. And once you understand the theory of phenotypic revolution, you understand that there are two types of life forms, those who understand TRP and those who don't. And if you read it, you'll be among the few thousands or tens of thousands of humans who understand the theory. And that will link you to probably an infinite number of civilizations on other planets, other universes, other star systems, who all have achieved the greatest achievement of science on their own civilization, which is to have reached this realization that they are the product of a series of phenotypic revolution, and you can think that with them in unison across the distances, across space, across existence. On top of it, in case that wasn't enough, the revolutionary phenotype announces a grave danger to humanity, which is that, as it turns out, we've been taking the direction of a phenotypic revolution without even knowing it. And the consequences are destructive for the entire world and humanity as we know it. MB says, the ultimate super gene is feral JF, wild boar cheese-eating reproduction machine. Well, we might very well have this could be generated on AI, I guess. Someone this morning woke up from a dream, and he had a dream where JF was interacting with an AI and trying to push the AI to describe with more and more detail the idea of a scientist in a swamp finding a UFO floating in the swamp. And this guy decided to generate his dream through an AI, and that's how it looked like. So a UFO, a scientist, and I don't know, am I the scientist? Is that JF the scientist? Or am I JF, the generator of AI images, trying to generate that dream? It's not clear. It was a weird dream. But now I am part of people's dream. Can you believe it? Animus Uprising sends $30. Thank you so much. He says, JF, I appreciate your help. We are very grateful for your insight into the issues, and we will take your advice to heart. Thank you for all you do. Well, thank you so much to you for the generous support. Brittany Venti. I can't believe I'm bigger than Brittany Venti. She's made $12.50 on Twitter this month. I made, and it was a relatively calm Twitter month for me, but I made a good $50. $50 for a calm Twitter month. Not my best month, but hey, I'm making 3 times the money of Brittany Venti. This is where booby streaming will take you so far, but not further. What else do we have? Quick review of the news before we close the show. Keith Woods says, Sam Milia has been given 2 years in prison for sharing stickers opposing mass immigration. Sam's wife, Laura, is 8 months pregnant, and Sam will now be in prison for the birth of his second child. We had a message from his wife, Laura Taller. By now, you will have heard that my husband, Sam, was sentenced today to 2 years in prison for his intentions behind publishing stickers that the prosecution said were both lawful and truthful. The sentencing guidelines gave the judge the option of choosing anywhere between 2 and 6 years. If you take anything from this, let it remind you why we do what we do. We live in a country where people are attacked by the anti-white state for advocating their own safety and interest. I don't want cuddles and condolences. I don't want thoughts and prayers. I want you to join me in filling the void that Sam leaves for the next few months. There are no excuses. Not everybody has to be on the front line. There is plenty you can do behind the scene. So, the absurdity of liberal society putting people in jail for flyers, and it's coming to Canada. It's coming for me. Justin Trudeau with his new law. Dr. Peterson was saying, wow, you're a scum rat, Viran. Don't think you're going to get away with this. The new Canadian law against hate is super rough. It's like likely to cause detestation. So if you say something that's likely to cause detestation, that not the police, not the government, not even a prosecutor has to spend time doing this, all citizens of the world, all citizens of Canada can sue you in front of these banana kangaroo court, and they can impose cost on you of $50,000, $100,000 for just one thing that you would say. And any Antifa leftist out there in the city can decide, I'm suing JF for this sentence, and I'm suing JF for this sentence. And it was likely to cause detestation. So if I say something like I was using the philosophical example earlier of nuking Africa, it was clear for any one of you guys listening that I wasn't saying we should nuke Africa. I was saying there's something wrong about this and let's find out what it is philosophically. But that doesn't change the fact that all of you could have understood me, the fact that I know what I'm saying, you know what I'm saying, but Antifa, Rando in Portland or in the city decides that no, that could be likely to create detestation of Africa. And what about any sort of news that I report? If it happens that a black person is featured in one of my videos, could it likely invite to detestation? So if this law passes, I don't think it's even possible to be a right-wing streamer in Canada. Thankfully, I'm headed to visit touristically the US. This will happen, by the way, in 1 month from now. So we have 1 month left before my big vacation. So I can't wait because I will be discovering the country, parts of the Bible Belt of America, seeing where my girlfriend grew up. So that is 1 month from now. So don't expect to see me in April. I will try to keep up on Twitter through my phone. I will try to perhaps do a couple of phone stream of sorts. But I won't be on the Odyssey, and that's in 1 month from now. MB14 says, please don't nuke Africa, JF. You will go to jail then. Well, in Canada, you don't have to nuke Africa. You just have to say it, and they will get you to jail. Aquanote says, JF, wouldn't that mean anti-white behaviors would instill detestation under that law? I mean, you can always make the argument, oh, what if we weaponize that law? But the thing is, first, the whole system is anti-white, so you're going to have a much higher threshold for pursuing anti-white stuff in this thing. And secondly, I'd rather the anti-white can speak, I'd rather the anti-white can speak rather than have the option of suing them. Because it would be a great cost that our side would have to initiate the system, throw the lawsuit, attend the various proceedings, complain that white people have been deprived of some rights. And ultimately, you're probably not going to have as much ease to convince the liberal Canadians on these courts to find something to be anti-white. I mean, these people are like zombies. They will see a blatant mistreatment of fathers in family courts, and they won't be able to say it. They'll be like, no, that's not anti-male. Oh, 80% of the fathers don't get to see their children. Oh, well, that just happened. I don't know that. That's just how it is. So you're not going to get easy re-weaponization. And on top of it, this whole system will have a chilling effect on speech. It's not even so important what will make it to the court. What's important is how much self-censorship will you have to do to just satisfy the possibility that you, to just try to avoid not getting in court. That's the problem. Meanwhile, censorship is back. X reinstates the policy against misgendering and dead naming. It's never really been gone. It's always been there, and it was an example, and Elon was totally disconnected from the TOS, and he was saying, oh, no, no, we can misgender. But then the TOS was saying, but don't do it repeatedly in a way that's harassing. And now it's back, and Elon is still saying, no, no, you can still say it, but you can't annoy the person with it. And I was like, how many times do you have to say the truth before it becomes harassment? Like, the sun will rise tomorrow. The sun will rise tomorrow. The sun will rise tomorrow. Oh, no, no, that's harassment, JF. When is it that then naming or misgendering someone, calling them a woman, when is it that it becomes harassment? That is it for tonight, boys. Much love. See you all tomorrow.